This morning we talked about the job of an elder. I was told that I probably scared everybody off. It was not the intention. I just think it's very important for us to understand the gravity of the responsibility and how much these guys sacrifice for us that we don't see, that they'll never tell you about, and they'll never brag to you about, because that's not how men of that character do. And so sometimes because of that, we as members of the Lord's church fail to see just how great their responsibility is. You know, the qualifications found in Titus 1 and 1 Timothy 3 are qualifications that reveal to us the type of Christian man that God demands to assume the role of a shepherd in His church. And it shows us the kind of character an elder must have. And these are essential qualities to be in any man who is to be an elder. And the type of leadership that should be brought forth from these men, and whether a man is capable of that leadership, is sometimes lost in our examination of qualifications. While those have to be met, we need to also consider, is the man a kind of leader that Jesus Christ would have to lead in His church as well? Because Jesus did leave us a pattern for leadership of His leaders. So we have to consider that as well. We need to remember that a man must have the right leadership mentality as set forth in the Scriptures. Now, there are several types of leadership, and we could go through those. I'm not going to tonight. I had thought about doing that, but decided not for time's sake. But there's a lot of ways that people lead, from authoritarian to passive to a lot of other things that would not necessarily be the types of leadership that Jesus Christ would want in His church. But I suggest that if we as Christians are serious about understanding the kind of leadership Jesus wants in His church, then we must allow Jesus to explain and designate how He wants Christians to be led. Now, it seems to me that this is the only appropriate way to identify proper congregational leadership for Christians who are committed to first century Christianity, which we are. We say we want to be just like what the first century church was. They were being led by men that were being directly guided by the Holy Spirit. And so we need to look to that as well. Jesus said that He would build His church in Matthew chapter 16 and verse 16. Paul said that Jesus purchased the church with His own blood in Acts chapter 20 and verse 28. Ephesians chapter 1 and verse 22 tells us that Jesus Christ is the head over all things in the church. And the church is Jesus' body, which is to be a living daily demonstration of faithfulness in Jesus Christ, in Ephesians chapter 1 and verse 23. You know, the ultimate leadership, the highest leadership over the church, is the leadership, of course, of Jesus Christ. He is the head over all things. He comes first before all things. The leadership which elders provide a congregation must reflect the will and the attitude and the desires of Jesus Christ. Those things that Jesus specified. And Jesus has specified the leadership that He wants over His people. While Titus 1 and 1 Timothy 3 give the qualifications for a Christian man who is suited to be considered in these leadership roles, Jesus gives the practical qualifications of that leadership, which do make clear the nature and the focus of how men should lead in the Lord's church. The men who wish to be the leaders Jesus wants in His church have striking role models. And those role models come in no less than the apostles themselves. Jesus clearly taught the 12 disciples the form of leadership He did not want over those who belonged to Him. He also clearly taught them the nature and focus of the leadership that He did want for His people. Since the apostles were those men appointed by Jesus to establish congregations and provide the earliest leadership of those congregations, it seems evident that the leadership that Jesus expects of elders cannot be different in nature than the leadership that He expected from apostles, because they are the leaders that Jesus desired to have in His church. It is unthinkable that elders are to lead congregations using attitudes forbidden the apostles. It is equally unthinkable that elders would not be expected to have the same leadership focus that Jesus clearly expected from those men as they led the church. Consider Jesus' teachings on leadership with me for just a moment. The first leadership quality Jesus repeatedly stressed, and the one that over my years and with my preacher friends, as we've talked about it, the one I've seen most abused and most neglected within our leaders sometimes, is humility. Matthew chapter 18, verses 1 through 6, the disciples asked Jesus who was the greatest in the kingdom of heaven. And Jesus answered, whoever then humbles himself as this child, he takes that child, whoever humbles himself as this child is the greatest in the kingdom of heaven. So how is greatness measured in the church? What is the mark of greatness within a man, within an individual? Or in our words, how do you rise to the top in the Lord's church? Greatness is measured by humility, the humility exemplified in an unassuming child. Humility is the mark of greatness. Matthew chapter 23, in verses 1 through 12, Jesus contrasted the common concepts of religious leadership in the Jewish society with His concepts of leadership. The scribes and the Pharisees were the highly visible, publicly acknowledged religious leaders of the day. And the scribes had become the acknowledged technical experts of the Scripture after their laborious task of repeatedly copying it over and over and over again. They knew the text and knew it better than anybody. The Pharisees were the self-professed and publicly accepted experts in the interpretation and the application of the Scriptures, of the law of Moses. Look at the common understood focus and expression of their leadership. They used the leadership of edict. They told the people what was right and what was to be done, but their responsibility was to determine and to declare the edicts, not to practice the edicts, or not to even care whether anybody else did. They didn't care about the people. They only cared about their edicts. They used the leadership of burdening responsibility. Their responsibility was binding the burdens of what is right and declaring others' responsibility. However, they were unwilling to assist those people in bearing those burdens or doing those rites in any way. Jesus said, you bind burdens on others that you will not lift a finger to carry yourself. That was the leadership that the disciples had seen. They regarded public notice and public attention as a right of leadership, and they, by intent, deliberately attracted attention to their position as leaders. They wanted you to see them. They wanted to be seen. They wanted to be introduced as leaders. They wanted the best places and to be called by the best names. They regarded public honor and praise as an appropriate adornment of leadership, and they sought honor for themselves. They regarded religious titles, which exalted them, as an appropriate way to dignify themselves in front of others. Listen to the way Jesus contrasted the focus and nature of the leadership He wants in contrast to that. Don't seek titles which exalt you. All of you are just brothers. You just have one teacher, one father, one guide. Don't be looking for names. You know, I've had to tell people over time, at least from a standpoint of a preacher, I'll be in a group of men and somebody will come up that we don't know, and they'll go, well, this is Bob, and this is Tom, and this is Joe, and this is Brother Adams. No, don't do that. Don't do that. If Joe is Joe and Bob is Bob, Nathan's Nathan, okay? Don't do that. Don't raise a person up. You know, we need to understand that we're not about those things. The greatest among you, Jesus said, shall be your servant. Whoever exalts himself shall be humbled, Jesus says. Whoever humbles himself shall be exalted. It was about humility. Leaders in the Lord's church do not worry about how they're seen. They're not worried about their image. They're not worried in regards to pride. They're not worried about whether they always get their way. They are humbled under Christ. They're worried about Him. Worried about His will. and His purposes, what He wants. In Luke chapter 14, verses 1 through 11, Jesus is in the home of one of the leaders of the Pharisees on the Sabbath day, and there are many guests there. And He challenged their basic concept and definition of what is right and wrong by healing a sick man right there. Now, we have reason to believe that they had brought this sick man to kind of bait Jesus to see if He would heal on the Sabbath. And Jesus went right ahead and did it. I guess he knew it was a trap. He didn't care it was a trap. It wasn't an issue of being trapped. It was an issue of what was right. And He healed that man there on the Sabbath, which the Pharisees said was a violation of the law of Moses. He had been invited to eat, so He gave a parable to the other guests assembled for the meal. And He said, when you are invited to a wedding feast, don't choose the most prominent seat available or you will embarrass yourself. Now, we don't really do this. You know, you go to a wedding today, we don't have this kind of thing going on with, you know, at the reception or whatever. You don't have where people sit, you know, in order of importance. But in those days, they did. The closer you were to the host, the more important you were. The further away, the less important you were. Well, now, if you came into the wedding feast and you think you're something, I am whoever, and you walk in there and you sit at the seat just right next to the host, it's empty. You sit there, well, the host comes in then, but he's got his best friends with him. These people are going to be above you. And you know what he's going to do? He's going to embarrass you by asking you to get up and move. And by that time, everybody else has clambered into all the other seats, so the only one left is way down there. He who has exalted himself will be humbled. But he said, if you go in and you sit in the last seat, you sit at the very end, and the guy comes in, he goes, wait, you're a friend of mine. You come up here and sit, you'll be exalted. See, it's all in how you get there. It's not about whether you're there or not. It's how you get there. Do you let God lift you up or do you lift yourself up? That's the difference between a good godly leader and a bad leader. Because see, in our business world today, in the secular world, it's all about promoting yourself. But you don't promote yourself in the Lord's church. God does that. And that's what Jesus wants from His leaders. Not someone out there politicking or promoting themselves, but someone who's humbly given to His will. He'll bless you. He'll raise you up. So you choose that insignificant seat. And Jesus finishes with, everyone who exalts himself shall be humbled, and everyone who humbles himself shall be exalted. Well, the second leadership quality that Jesus stressed was service. The service rendered by a slave. We all go, yeah, I like to serve. I do a public service. I do a service project every now and then. I like to rate people. I like to do this. No, the service rendered by a slave. Not, I just did some good for somebody. See, a slave doesn't get that choice, does he? He doesn't get to, oh, I'll just do a little bit here, and now I'm not a slave anymore. No, slave is committed. He's given, his life is given to that. Nothing else. And that's what Jesus wants. We've already noted that Jesus stressed in Matthew 23 that the avenue to greatness was being a servant. The classic illustration of Jesus' emphasis on the leadership of service is found in Matthew chapter 20, in verses 20 through 28. The mother of James and John came to Jesus requesting a personal favor, didn't she? Mama's boys. She as her and her sons and the rest of the 12 believed Jesus had come to establish an earthly rule, an earthly kingdom. And Jesus was going to become the king, and the 12 would be His advisors. They would be His administrators. They would be the Daniel, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego's of Jesus' kingdom. Her request was to give the command now, at this particular point. She wanted to go ahead and get this in writing, so to speak. Give the command now that James and John will sit on your left and on your right in the kingdom, the two best seats. See, someone else, and in one text says that the boys themselves asked for this. See, they're trying to promote themselves. And they've forgotten how this works. Jesus said that she did not know what she was asking for. And you know, it's kind of funny because you read and the other 10 are indignant at what James and John have done. You know why they're indignant? They're not indignant because I can't believe they did something so awful. They're indignant because why didn't we ask first? They wanted it too. We know that because even after this point, they're going to be fighting over who's the best. They're just mad because James and John jumped the gun and got ahead of them. Not any kind of righteous indignation. You know, things were on the verge of developing at this point into a major split, a major contention among the 12. A contention about leadership. Anyone who has been involved in any kind of leadership for any period of time knows what a dangerous moment this was. This is the kind of situation that causes people to get disgusted and quit, right? This is the kind of situation which breeds anger and resentment and leads to irreparable alienation between people. And Jesus called the 12 to Himself. It's heart to heart. It's eyeball to eyeball time. It's time to sit down and have a talk, boys. It is time to confront a very serious situation and issue and deal with it. This moment occurred very late in Jesus' ministry, very close to His death. You know, we're getting down to it. Jesus is expecting these men to lead, and they still have no clue as to the kind of leaders Jesus wants for them to be. If Satan succeeded in using jealousy, petty ambitions, hunger for control and power, the desire for dominance, or disgust and resentment to fragment the 12 and destroy their potential function as Jesus' apostles after His death, then Satan would have dealt a major blow to Jesus' ministry and His mission. And you know what? Satan still uses those things today when we're trying to look for leaders. May God help us. May we pray that we do not allow Him to divide us, to take these kind of petty things and to make them an issue with us. Because He almost did it with the 12 apostles right here in the very presence of Jesus Christ Himself. He's good. I don't want to be His tool. I don't want to be His puppet. And I certainly don't want to be His instrument of division. And I hope that you do not either. Speaking as we would speak, Jesus said, "Men, you still don't get it. You have not yet understood precisely what I have been trying to explain to you for a long time. Let me explain it to you very simply. True enough, I have come to establish a kingdom and to be a king. But what I have come to establish and be is something you clearly do not understand. Get this straight and understand it clearly. Occupying a position of leadership in my kingdom is unlike any other kingdom on this earth. Those who rule in other earthly kingdoms lord it over their subjects. They have power and control, and they exercise it. They make certain everyone knows who has the power, who has the control, and who calls the shots. They live in this perpetual pride of power. Not only do they have the power and control, but they exercise the authority. Because I said so is the only reason they need. That's all my mother needed, right? But that's all they need, because I said so. I'm the king. That's how they ruled. They make it clear that they have the right of authority and no one has permission to challenge it. Jesus was making a point that we need to understand, and we need to understand this now and understand it clearly. That is not what the leadership in the kingdom of heaven was to be like. It was not what it was to be about. It was never to be that way in His kingdom. Jesus is saying, lordship is not the avenue to greatness or position in my kingdom, but being the lowliest servant who serves everyone is the avenue to greatness. It is the avenue to being the leader that Christ calls for. The key to a leader being prominent in my kingdom, He says, is his becoming a slave to everyone else. See, a slave, their wants and their desires, they don't matter. The only want and the only desire that matters is the master's. Everything else is irrelevant. Jesus says, I am the example. I'm asking you to lead in precisely the same way I lead. I did not come as a Lord with authority who had to be served. I came as a servant who served. I did not come for others to heap gifts of honor upon me. I came to give my life as a ransom for many. See, He left the example.
12 still didn't get it. It's a surprise, isn't it? The whole idea of leadership through humility and service to others was contrary to every form of leadership they had ever known, and it is still pretty foreign to us today. Everyone understood that leadership must be based on authority and position, which supported pride and arrogance. So on the very last night of his life, the same old pride and arrogance and the jockeying for positions was taking place in the upper room. When Jesus arrived in the upper room, the argument was, which of us is greater than the other? Jesus is going to be dead by this time tomorrow night. He's going to be in the grave. And this is what the disciples are arguing about. John chapter 13, verses 3 through 17. The point of that text, it had been a very successful week for Jesus. They had come to Jerusalem in the fear that Jesus would be killed. They'd even said, you know, if he's going to die, we'll just go die with him. But instead, they were riding the greatest crest of popularity that Jesus had ever known in his ministry that we have recorded. So when they gathered for the Passover with Jesus, no one dared to condescend to wash another's feet. Jesus then showed them the heart and soul, the life essence of all that he had tried to teach them about leadership that he wants in his kingdom. He got a basin of water and a towel. And the God that created the world and the universe and all that is in it, that God got on his hands and knees and washed filthy feet. How many of us are willing to do something so degrading for another? It was the lowest possible task that a slave could be given. The lowest slave on the proverbial totem pole, this is his job. And the God of the universe was doing it. The God who controls all things, has all power, humbled himself. I tell you what, you may think you're pretty good, and I may think I'm pretty smart, and you may think we're a lot of things. We're not God. And we find ourselves blocked from humbling ourselves for so many things that are ridiculous in the eyes and the power of God. Yet this is the example that Jesus left. When he finished, he asked, "Do you know what I have done?" I ask you tonight, do you know what he did? Do you understand it? Or is it just a story you know from the New Testament? Or do you see God on the floor washing feet? He said, do you truly understand the significance of this act? Do you? Do I? Have we taken the time to think about it? I mean, Jesus is on his way to the cross and he took time out to do this. It must be pretty important. He says, you call me teacher and Lord, and we do that. And that is who I am. And that's accurate. He said, if your teacher and Lord is humble enough to wash your feet, then you surely must be humble enough to wash each other's. As Paul said in Romans 12, giving preference to one another. That your needs are above my wants. In Jesus' teaching on leadership, he outright rejected the pride and arrogance of lording it over others. The selfishness and exclusiveness of authoritarianism. The competition and the striving for ascendance among leaders. The power and intimidation of threats and fears. I've been in that situation, folks. I've seen men that wanted the office of elder threaten the Lord's church. I had one tell me that if he didn't become an elder, him and his little group of people would leave and the church's doors would be shut in a year because we couldn't survive without him. You think he deserved to be an elder? You think that he washed anybody's feet? I told him I trusted in somebody better to keep the doors open at the church building. That church is still there. And it will continue to be there. Jesus rejected the power and intimidation of threats and fear, the attitudes of superiority. Let me tell you what, if you think you're better than anyone else in this building, you're not qualified to be an elder. I'll just tell you that right now. Because everyone in this building is in the same boat, having all sinned and come short of the glory of God. And you are what you are tonight, not because of who you are or what you've done. You are what you are tonight because Jesus Christ died and shed His blood that you could be here tonight as a child of God. That's it. So if you look down upon people, for whatever it is, I don't care, you're not qualified. You don't meet the leadership requirements of Jesus. Jesus rejects the aspirations to prominence. If a person wants to be an elder, simply to be the boss, you're not qualified to be the leader that Jesus Christ calls for. He taught, practiced, and insisted on two primary qualities in leaders who led His people. Those who led in His kingdom must be humble men by Jesus' definition of humble. And they must be those who lead in His kingdom by being servants of all that are in His kingdom. Alexander Strock, in his book, Biblical Eldership, wrote regarding Jesus' emphasis on leaders being servants. He said, "Meism is the idol of modern man. To be servant of all inflicts a death blow to meism and selfishness." See, Jesus knew that. If men would serve others, they wouldn't have time to serve themselves. They would be doing a great work. When the mother of James and John asked Jesus to seat her sons on His right and left hands, He turned to the two men and asked, "Are you able to drink the cup I am about to drink?" And they said, "Yes." But they didn't even know what the cup was. They didn't understand. Their mother didn't know what she was asking. They didn't know what cup they were going to drink. But the implication was they were going to drink it. They were going to know leadership. Any godly man who aspires to be an elder, a deacon, or a preacher of the gospel must ask himself, "Am I willing to drink the cup?" And it's a difficult cup. Think about the cup that Jesus was asked to drink. And it's a cup of self-sacrifice. You know, it is essential that a man understand the meaning of that question. It is essential that he be committed to drinking that cup. If a man seeks the position of elder so that he can get his way in the church, he is not worthy of leading Christ's church. I had a man one time tell me, he said, "If I don't become an elder, Nathan, I will squeal like a pig under a gate." The man was not a liar. He did. But that's why he never deserved to be a leader. If a man seeks the position of elder so he will be seen and honored, he is not worthy to lead the Lord's church. If a man is willing to cause problems and difficulties in the church that are not about doctrine or about his opinions to get his way, if he is willing to divide the church, get a little group of people together to try and get his way, he is not worthy to lead the Lord's church. I knew a fine elder, one of the finest I've ever known. And an opinion issue came up in regards to him, and he was on the right side. There was no doubt about it. But there was a group, and we talked about the negative minority within congregations sometimes, and it was really that kind of group. But they were threatening to leave. They were threatening to quit. And it wasn't like there was not going to be an eldership or whatever. And this man said, "I do not want this church to be divided. I do not want people fighting over me." And he stepped down for the good of the church. A lesser man. A man that isn't humble. A man that isn't really focused on Christ would have said, "I'm going to stay and I'll take anybody down that gets in my way." And I've seen that too. To the detriment of the Lord's church. Such a person is not worthy. If a man is willing to forget his wants and desires and simply seek to serve all the members of the congregation, putting them before and above himself. If he is willing to completely and totally abide by the Word of God, he is worthy of leading in the Lord's church. This is the cup. Jesus' cup was death, and the cup of leadership in the church is death to self and total sacrifice to the church. That is the example that Jesus left. That is the example of the chief shepherd. He came, humbled himself to be a man, and completely sacrificed himself for the church. And that's what he expects from his leaders. In fact, that's what he expects from every single one of us. Because the qualifications of an elder, save just a few, are what every one of us should have in our lives. We don't all have to be married. We don't all have to have children. There are things we all have to be. And one is dead to self and given wholly to Christ and His church. That will make men worthy to lead. And they're worthy not because they're something wonderful. They're worthy because Jesus Christ is their life. He makes them worthy, just as He makes you and I worthy to be children of God. This evening, if you're not a child of God, He wants to make you worthy to be that. He's already died so that you can be. He's already shown you that great love that you can be a child of God tonight. And He so wants you to come. If you are a child of God, maybe you've been living astray from Him. Jesus calls you home tonight. You know, we have seen leadership. We have seen it in our Lord. He has left for us a pattern. He has led the way for us and how we are to walk in this life as He lived this life perfectly. May we follow Him. Lead as He led. Serve as He served. Sacrifice as He sacrificed. That we might be what He is and acceptable to Him. If we can assist you in any way this evening, won't you let us as we stand and as we sing.